KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A bill which would mandate the teaching of the Osheti Shakoan Essential Understandings, or OSEUs, has advanced from the Senate Education Committee and the South Dakota Legislature. The bill was brought by Lower Brule Republican Senator Tamara Grove. She says the move is in the spirit of resetting state-tribal relations.
I am honored and blown away for all seven of the senators to stand with me on 196 to really like lean into the reset that the good chairman from Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate called for is just unbelievable.
Under former Governor Kristi Noem's administration, state-tribal relations saw many polarizing moments, including Noem saying Native children, quote, don't have any hope. That accumulated in the then-governor's banishment from every reservation in South Dakota. In the State of the Tribe speech to lawmakers, Sisseton Wahpeton Chairman J. Garrett Renville said this moment was a chance to reset that relationship. Grove says teaching these lessons in all public schools is a meaningful step toward reconciliation.
A big part of what we carry has been the rejection and the abandonment and those kinds of heart wounds. It's part of the healing process, right? It says we want to move forward and we want to be more inclusive in how we're doing our education.
The OSEUs teach Native culture, traditions, and history. The standards were developed by a team of educators and experts in culture, history, oral traditions, and language in collaboration with the state's education department. The bill will next be heard on the Senate floor. In the New Mexico legislature, a bill that would prohibit school boards from banning tribal regalia at graduation ceremonies in the state unanimously passed its first committee this week. Reporter Jeanette Didios reports it stems from an incident that happened last May in the city of Farmington.
A Native American high school graduate was told to remove their embellished graduation cap that had an eagle plume and beads. Farmington Municipal Schools later released a statement clarifying the district's policy that caps and gowns could not be altered. The student was given a generic cap for the remainder of the ceremony. New Mexico Secretary for the Indian Affairs Department, Josette Monette from the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa, discussed how important wearing regalia is for Native American students.
It's our way of honoring the accomplishment. It's our family's way of honoring our accomplishments, and I think it means something to be able to represent who we are as Native people.
During the Senate Indian Rural and Cultural Affairs Committee hearing, Republican Senator William Scherer from Farmington suggested defining what regalia is and questioned whether this bill could affect the First Amendment.
What about other groups? I know this one clearly talks about Native American, but what if somebody wanted to support Christopher Columbus? What if somebody wanted to put a swastika on their head for First Amendment rights?
Bill co-sponsor Democratic Senator Benny Shendo Jr. from Jemez Pueblo says the intent isn't to exclude anybody, but to reaffirm Native American students' sovereign rights.
We're the only group of people as federally recognized tribes that are named in the Constitution. No other group of people is. That's why this relationship and what we do, we're not excluding anybody. We're exerting our right to be who we are, that this country identified from the very beginning.
Democratic Senator William Soles recommended giving the bill an emergency clause so it would go into effect in time for this year's graduates in May. For National Native News, I'm Jeanette Didios.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance. With offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This massive mountain commands a reverent name, a steadfast name, not the name of an individual.
Senator Lisa Murkowski introduces a bill to keep Denali as the name for North America's tallest peak. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 13th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, lawmakers consider a measure to split the Division of Agriculture off as its own department.
Sure, right now you've got a commissioner that loves ag, you've got a governor that loves ag, but in 2 years, that could completely change.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you involved in subsistence hunting, fishing, and trapping? The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking young leaders to fill non-voting seats on the Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Interested Alaska residents ages 18 to 25 are to submit a letter of interest, including two references, by Sunday, February 16, 2025. More information at 907-444-1376. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced a bill today that would keep the name Denali on North America's highest peak. Murkowski made her case on the Senate floor.
This massive mountain commands a reverent name, a steadfast name, not the name of an individual, a person who comes and goes, who may have had an impact for a brief moment in time. But this is ageless, timeless, the great one.
It's pretty easy for a senator to introduce a bill. Getting it passed into law is the trick. At her office later, Murkowski said she'd raise the issue to each of the other senators. Some of them, she says, have geographic names back home they'd like to change too.
I'm just going to take it every day and basically create a movement.
Denali stems from the Koyukon Athabascan language. In his inaugural address last month, President Trump said he was changing the name back to Mount McKinley, the mountain's official moniker during the 20th century and into the 21st.
And we will restore the name of a great president, William McKinley, to Mount McKinley, where it should be and where it belongs.
Trump then signed an executive order giving his Interior Secretary 30 days to make the change and also to update the official geographic names database. With that, Trump rekindled a cultural crusade Alaskans fought for 100 years. The Alaska legislature passed a resolution last week calling for the name to remain Denali. State lawmakers passed a similar measure in 1975. The request languished for decades at the U.S. Board of Geographic Names. That's because at least one Congress member from Ohio always had a bill pending to keep the name McKinley, to honor the Ohio-born president. And that's all it took, introducing a bill, because the Board of Geographic Names has a policy to not act on any request if Congress is considering it. Murkowski says she's not sure her bill could similarly stall the name change just by virtue of its introduction.
It may, but I don't know.
Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska is a co-sponsor of Murkowski's bill, but getting many other Republicans in Congress on board won't be easy because they'd be going against the wishes of President Trump. State lawmakers are looking closely at Governor Mike Dunleavy's plan to create a State Department of Agriculture. Dunleavy issued an executive order proposing the new department in December. As Alaska Public Media Capitol reporter Eric Stone reports, Dunleavy's proposal would split out the existing Division of Agriculture from the Department of Natural Resources.
Dunleavy's plan would add 13 new administrative and IT positions, including a cabinet-level commissioner. And to start, it would handle essentially the same functions as the current division: farm loans, land leases, marketing, scientific research, and so on. Natural Resources Commissioner John Boyle presented the concept to House and Senate committees on Wednesday. DNR is a $173 million agency with a wide variety of responsibilities, dealing with everything from mining and oil and gas leasing to wildfire management and state parks. Boyle says supply chain interruptions during the pandemic pushed the Dunleavy administration to make food security a bigger policy priority. And he says creating a cabinet-level department would force the state to focus on growing the agriculture sector on a long-term basis.
Sure, right now you've got a commissioner that loves ag, you've got a governor that loves ag, but in 2 years, that could completely change, and then ag might not have its voice or might not have its champion as much anymore. And so this is really a way to leave that lasting legacy.
Farmers and agriculture groups testified in support of the new department. Here's Alaska Farm Bureau President Scott Mungridge.
With improved access to lands, investment in research, development of the diverse climate-suited crops, we can significantly increase the availability of locally grown food.
Creating the 13 new Department of Agriculture positions would cost the state some $2.7 million, and the 37 positions slated to move out of DNR would cost another $7.2 million. And Boyle says he is not planning to propose corresponding cuts to the existing DNR budget. But the state is, of course, reckoning with a budget deficit and a number of other pressing needs. Senator Matt Klayman, an Anchorage Democrat, says he's skeptical, especially as students, teachers, and parents plead with lawmakers to boost public school funding.
How do I make the case to them and say, this year, it is so important that we fund this new Department of Agriculture that we need to take $2.7 million away from what we could put toward education and put that toward this new department so that we're set up for the next governor in a year and a half?
Other lawmakers, though, on both sides of the aisle, argue the price tag is worth it. Palmer Republican Senator Shelley Hughes chaired a 36-member food security task force that recommended creating an agriculture department.
I would say if not now, when, and things are unsure. But I would also point to the fact we are talking about an education funding need in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And here we're talking about a couple million dollars.
The new department will start work in July unless lawmakers pass a resolution opposing the executive order by mid-March. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Alaska's Emergency Operations Center has canceled an annual test of the system responsible for alerting Alaskans about potential tsunamis. Each month, the National Tsunami Warning Center tests its system that alerts the Coast Guard, FEMA, and other entities to tsunami activity. But once a year, the test goes further, and the warning is broadcast on public radio stations, television stations, and residents' cell phones. That usually happens in late March, around the anniversary of the deadly 1964 earthquake and tsunami that struck Alaska, but the test has been canceled for this year. Jeremy Zedek, a spokesperson for the State Emergency Operations Center, says the main factor is that the system has been activated two times since July of 2023, when it was triggered by real warnings.
Based on that information and the data that was gathered, it just looked like the test wasn't going to be necessary to gauge if the system worked or not.
The tsunami warning system was activated in December by an earthquake in California and previously in July of 2023 after an earthquake near the Aleutian Islands. Zedek says the tests are crucial to ensure the system is working as intended, but he says it's also important not to do them too frequently.
We want to make sure that the system is fully working, and we believe it is. But we don't want to over-test it, and then people become a little bit desensitized to the warnings when they're real.
But both the tests and real warnings have malfunctioned before, highlighting issues with the system. That includes after the 2023 earthquake near the Aleutians. The system sent out emergency alerts to people in communities that were not actually at risk. Also in 2023, the annual test did not reach a handful of communities it should have, including Ketchikan and Sitka. Dave Snyder is the Tsunami Warning Coordinator with the National Tsunami Warning Center. He says that was largely due to confusion over which test was happening. Another factor was a coding failure, which he says has since been ironed out. Snyder says the Tsunami Warning Center, the National Weather Service headquarters in Alaska, and the state all agreed the warning wasn't needed this year. Still, he emphasized the importance of regularly testing the system to be sure it and the communities who rely on it are ready if a tsunami does happen.
We haven't had a big one or one that's locally impactful in a really long time. That doesn't mean that they don't exist. So just reminding folks there in your community that, you know, they do need to have a plan.
Snyder says paying attention to natural warning signs in coastal communities can be just as crucial as alert systems. Think hearing a deep rumble, feeling the earth shake, or observing unusual ocean behavior. He says those types of warnings can save lives. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, girls hockey is growing in Alaska despite significant financial hurdles.
I think we just need to keep holding that spirit, that girls hockey spirit, and coming out here and just battling for the girls hockey in Alaska.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News, weekdays on your local public radio station.
The head of the union that represents civilian employees at Fort Wainwright and Fort Greely says at least a dozen workers have resigned, retired, been furloughed, or laid off as part of the Trump administration's effort to sharply reduce the federal workforce. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Bill Ward is president of the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 1834, and he says some civil service workers have agreed to resign or retire under the Deferred Resignation Program that offers to pay them without showing up for work until the end of September.
There's a lot of employees looking, and we've had several who have taken or have signed the buyout offers. There's a lot of folks looking at resigning or retiring.
Local 1834 represents more than 2,500 civilian employees at the two Army installations and all commissary and healthcare workers statewide. Ward says he's not sure how many civilian workers at Wainwright and Greeley have been notified that they must leave the federal workforce or face layoffs. Spokespersons for the two installations referred inquiries to higher headquarters or other agencies like the Office of Personnel Management. Ward says that many believe that they speak out against the program, they'll be fired or barred from working for the feds.
Oh, yeah, they're scared. Yeah, tremendously scared.
And so are many federal contractor employees who've been swept up in the administration's drive to shrink the federal workforce. One contractor who worked from home says she was furloughed about a week after President Trump was inaugurated.
Everybody at our organization got really worried because there are quite a lot of us who are remote workers. We were told to, if you were at the office, to go home. If you were working remotely or working from home, to log out and to not access your government computer or your email account until further notice. We were all told it would be furlough without pay.
The contractor said in a later interview that she's since been laid off. She asked not to be identified, both because she was afraid of the backlash that might bring and because she'd like to rejoin the federal workforce someday.
It's a very stressful situation, and a lot of employees are very worried. A lot of people have families to support and bills to pay.
The contractor worker says she's applying for other jobs and unemployment compensation, but she's stressed out over losing her job and what she fears is happening to the federal government.
So I'm deeply concerned about the future of our agency and about large parts of the rest of the government. I mean, it's really terrifying the way things are being torn apart.
Ward, the union president, says a lot of civilian employees are telling him the same thing. And he says he's been communicating with Senator Lisa Murkowski's office about the situation.
I think Lisa's going to do whatever she can do to help us.
Ward is a military veteran, like a lot of other civilian workers, and he says they take their job seriously.
Every single one of us raised our hand and swore an oath to our country and to our Constitution. And I serve my fellow countrymen. I serve the military. And so my job, irregardless of what's going on back in D.C. with a couple of billionaires, I'm going to continue to do my job. And everything from sweeping the floor to making sure our aircraft are safe in the air to the ones that save lives in the hospitals and everywhere else, they all feel the same way. We're going to continue to do our job the best that we can do with what we have to work with.
Ward says he's not worried about speaking out against the mistreatment of federal workers.
Don't worry, I'm eligible for retirement.
In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
As chair of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, Senator Lisa Murkowski was one of the featured speakers at the National Congress of American Indians Winter Summit in Washington, D.C. this week. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, she encouraged tribes to stand up for their rights.
The phrase was like an echo at the conference, repeated by leaders like Minnesota Congresswoman Betty McCollum.
Lisa Murkowski can't do this alone.
Senator Murkowski can't do it alone.
And that was Mark Macaro, president of the National Congress of American Indians. In his speech on the state of Indian nations, he addressed the elephant in the room.
I know tribal communities are debating how to respond to the actions of the new administration. Well, I strongly affirm it's time to speak up. It's time to stand up.
Macaro and other tribal leaders are worried about President Trump's executive orders, which target diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and how they might threaten the ability of tribes to deliver services that are culturally sensitive and appropriate, services that can vary widely from tribe to tribe.
When it deals with DEI, what does that mean? We have been told by the administration it means one thing. I want to see the proof that Indian country really is not included in that.
McCollum is a Democrat and vice chair of the Congressional Native American Caucus. She says there is a bipartisan effort underway to protect tribal funding. And as chairman of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, Senator Lisa Murkowski is at the forefront.
When I'm home in Alaska, I am often introduced by my gifted name, which is Anshawatki.
Anshawatki means Lady of the Land in the Thlinkit language of Southeast Alaska. Murkowski says the name is both an honor and a responsibility. She told the group she's encouraged by a letter sent out by the Interior Department to clarify that the president's executive orders will not affect the government's treaty and trust obligations.
The federal government is charged with moral obligations of the highest responsibility and trust towards Native Indian tribes. And it's that trust responsibility that we're talking about here.
Despite the Interior Department's directive and another from the Health and Human Services Department, some tribes have had trouble accessing their federal money. Murkowski encouraged them to contact her committee so it can keep track. The senator also says she understands the administration's desire to make government more efficient.
But how we achieve it matters.
Murkowski says the administration needs to follow the proper channels and procedures.
They should not, they cannot, they must not undermine the obligations that we have to tribes, and they have to follow the law.
Murkowski drew the most response from the crowd when she compared the current political climate to boating in rough seas.
Those of us from Southeast know that choppy weather crops up. It can be really uncomfortable.
Murkowski hopes a letter she sent to the Office of Management and Budget will help calm things down. She says it urges OMB to immediately direct all federal agencies to recognize the political status of tribes.
In the meantime, I think we got people vomiting off both sides of the boat, and it's just kind of tumultuous now. So
Murkowski also noted that the president's new Department of Government Efficiency might take time out to learn from tribes who have saved millions through tribal compacting, a process in which tribes run their own health and education programs. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 47 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com. How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Four cats and two dogs were euthanized by the Sitka Police Department following a breakdown of shelter operations last summer that left police supervising the facility without an animal control officer or volunteers. These details were included in an internal investigation from the city's administrator. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
An investigation into Sitka's animal shelter was released to the local assembly over the weekend. KCAW obtained a copy of the report from Municipal Administrator John Leach through a public records request. The city's operation of its animal shelter has been under scrutiny since July. That's after the volunteer group, Friends of Sitka Animal Shelter, was abruptly barred from entering the facility due to what police have called security concerns that the volunteer group has denied. A month later, the city's animal control officer went missing for 2 days while looking for her dog on Cat Leanne Bay Road. She was found safe, but had an accident on the trail and did not return to work. Police then assumed animal care responsibilities at the shelter. The city's investigation revealed that six pets, four cats and two dogs, were euthanized by gunshot in September, confirming rumors that led to public outcry late last year. The euthanasia was carried out by Lieutenant John Ashe under the direction of Police Chief Robert Beatty, who was also present. While the administrator found that the euthanasia was legal under Sitka General Code and carried out by trained personnel, the investigation noted that the, quote, lack of transparency, consultation, and clear policies regarding shelter operations contributed to significant public concern and eroded trust between the city, police, shelter volunteers, and the public. The release of the investigation comes as the city is continuing to negotiate a contract with animal shelter volunteers that would allow them back in the building. In the report, Leach makes several recommendations, including establishing formal policies and communication structures between volunteers, police, and the city, restoring volunteer access, and evaluating whether the city can ultimately transition shelter management to the volunteer group under a lease agreement. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Alaska's grueling Iron Dog snow machine race is set to begin this Saturday in Big Lake. Executive Director Mike Vassar has been involved with the event for more than 20 years.
The race just gets faster and faster as the equipment, the technology, the gear, everything evolves forward. Technology is just advancing everything.
Covering over 2,500 miles, racers will speed through Alaska's backcountry, traveling to Kotzebue and Nome before returning to Big Lake on a trail that Vassar says is in good condition. The Iron Dog describes itself as the world's longest and toughest snow machine race. Vassar says the race is also about the mental toughness and resilience of its competitors.
And in my opinion, these are the greatest athletes that you'll ever see. They're the greatest athletes in the world because of everything they deal with.
This year's competition features 30 teams, including six past champions and a larger group of young competitors, whom Vassar calls the Young Guns, taking on the race. With a diverse field of teams and advancing technology, Vassar says this year's Iron Dog is going to be both competitive and demanding.
It's a commitment. It's a huge commitment. You need to be committed.
The teams will head out at 10 a.m. on Saturday. Vassar expects the course to take top teams about 2 days to finish. Well, the Diamond West Girls High School hockey team won the state championship last weekend for the fourth consecutive year. The win cements the team as the most dominant in all of Alaska sports, but the season almost never got started. Despite the growth of girls and women's hockey worldwide, Alaska Public Media's Tim Rocky reports that financial difficulties have plagued the local league since its inception.
The girls' high school hockey season is a chance for competitive players to get extra ice time in between tournaments for their travel teams, and it's the only opportunity for high school girls to skate recreationally with their peers in Anchorage. Olivia Snelson is a senior at West, She doesn't play competitively, but relishes the chance to be part of the team.
In our schools, like, a lot of the people don't even know that we have girls' teams, even though our girls' teams, like, do a lot better than our boys' teams. There's just something so cool about being able to, like, wear your school's jersey and, like, represent your school on the ice.
Girls' high school hockey in Anchorage got started in 2003, but just 10 years later, the Anchorage School District dissolved the program, citing low participation. For the last 7 years, the league has been run by the Anchorage Hockey Association, and it receives no financial support from the school district. Since 2013, the league has struggled to garner enough sponsorship to pay for new equipment and ice time. Brian Gross is the director of the Anchorage Hockey Association and coaches the Diamond West team. He says two large grants from the Dick's Sporting Goods Foundation have been a huge help.
So having the Dick's Foundation step in with that grant has been tremendous because we've made it by the skin of our teeth a few years. We've been short a few years. We still plan to do the fundraising that we've done in the past, but if we can spread that money out over 4 or 5 years to fill the gaps to help us meet that $80,000 bill that we have every year, it can keep the girls on the ice.
Registration fees generate about a quarter of the $80,000 needed yearly. Gross is hopeful that the league can stick around long enough to provide opportunities for more girls to play hockey. And coaches say they're seeing a surge in skaters at the younger age groups. Whitney Wigren played on the first all-girls team in Alaska over 30 years ago and now coaches youth hockey in Anchorage. Wigren says she was surprised by the number of girls who showed up for a tryout she held early last year.
Yeah, I looked at my registrations and I was like, I only got like 10 girls signed up. I was like, this is going to be pretty rough. The day of the event, I ended up having 47 girls register. I didn't even know there was 47 girls at the 2013, the 2014 birth ages. So going to the rink, I was totally humbled.
At a Learn to Skate event earlier this month at the Dempsey Ice Arena in Anchorage, girls from ages 4 to 10 don glitter and tutus and play games while learning skills from older kids.
The candy grab! Are you guys ready for this?
Yeah!
You guys remember how we do it?
And overall, just kind of a fun time to get together and being with someone that looks like you, you know. Hockey is mainly dominated by boys, which, you know, is totally fine, but there's also a space for girls, and that space is growing.
Four-time state champion Tana Carlson is one of the standout players on the Diamond West team. After a game where she scored 4 goals in January, Carlson said she was grateful for the chance to represent her school on the ice and wants to see more girls have the same opportunity she did.
I think we just need to keep holding that spirit, that girls' hockey spirit, and coming out here and just battling for the girls' hockey in Alaska.
For Carlson, the end of her playing days in a Diamond West uniform is bittersweet, but she'll be followed by a strong contingent of girls eager to make their mark on the ice. In Anchorage, I'm Tim Rocky.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Eric Stone in Juneau, Avery Elfelt in Haines, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Rhonda McBride, and introducing Cadence Cedars in Anchorage, and Catherine Rose in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
When I was only just a friend to you, all I wanted
trying to do is get to know you better. Now I wanna give my heart to you. Tell me, do you feel like I do when we're together? 'Cause I come alive with your touch. Your touch, it always sets me free. I can't get quite enough. Too much of you is what I need. Yes, I know you're the one. 'Cause love has come alive in me, yeah. Tell me, am I out of line? Ooh, ooh. Tell me if I'm wasting time. I don't mind giving my love to you. I can't help it, baby. If I asked you, would you say I do? 'Cause I come alive with your touch. Your touch, it always sets me free. No, I can't get enough. Too much of you is what I need.
Telling me I'll die soon. I don't really want that to impact you, but I don't know, maybe I'm just paranoid. I just want the best for you. I just want what's left of you. Oh, you tell me that you're sad inside. I'm sad that I can't satisfy. Yeah, I pray that I get it right this time. Maybe we'll be alright. Oh, you tell me that you're sad inside. I'm sad that I can't satisfy. Yeah, I pray that I get it right this time. Maybe we'll be alright. I'd do anything in my power to see you just smile. I want you to prosper and come proper, even if that means I ain't by your side. I'd do anything in my power to see you just smile. I want you to prosper and come proper, even if that means I ain't by your side.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanna see you smile. Don't cry. Even
lower means I gotta let you go. Depending on your daughter, learn to be alone. Cause I'm so desensitized. When I'm scared, it's touching. I need you to love you. You want so much more from me, but I can only be yours. I spent every day right beside you, beside you. 100 pics of me on your phone. Now you're someone that I used to know. At this point we playing with fire, fire. You don't wanna see what's in my phone. It's just gonna hurt you.
I don't want anything in my power to see you just smile. I want you to cry. Burn, come proper, even if that means I ain't by your side. I do anything in my power to see you just smile. I want you to prosper and come proper, even if that means I ain't by your side.
Yeah.
never thought I'd fall right through. I fell for every word you said. You made me feel I needed you and forced my heart to think it's true. But I found I'm powerless with you.
Goodbye, no good.
Trapping like the narco. Got dope like Pablo. Cut dope like Pablo. Cut dope. Chop trees with the Draco. On the knock at Diego. Say hasta luego. We'll be in rapping Kilo. Yeah. Snub nose with potato.
Straight out the jungle. Yeah. This real rap, no mambo. My skin black like mambo. Got stash spots in Honda. In the brick house. Used to hit listen, go to my house. Mama, straight out the jungle. Young don't know none now. Young know too much now. Bow, 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 that'll slow him down. We pick up the hondos. Then drop them off to Honcho. Honcho. I came from the bando. Bando. Here go the
wild. Like the narco. Narco. Got dope like Pablo.
Pablo.
Cut dope like Pablo.
Cut dope.
Chop trees with the Draco.
Draco.
On the knock at Diego.
Diego.
Say hasta luego.
Luego.
We'll be in rapping Kilo.
Yeah.
Snub nose with potato.
Straight out the jungle.
Yeah.
This real rap, no mambo.
Yeah.
My skin black like mambo.
Yeah.
Got stash spots in Honda.
Hey,
cold game with the cocaine.
Cold.
The more money make more rain.
Rank.
Pouring up a paint while I'm back in propane.
Bang.
Point blank range, giving no range. Skip to my lube with the pack and the cat. Jiffin', lube with the breach, where they at?
Where?
Drippin', ooze, the paddock all wet. Birds in the truck, they ain't leaving out the nest. Get pie base set like milk. Yup, running with the pack, got slipped.
Yep.
Hands in the cookie jar, cut his finger off. Being greedy, we gon' cut his tummy out. 100 bricks on the road, took a couple routes.
Break.
Flush mama house, her man's a Philly couch.
Hey.
I ain't really with the razzle dazzle. Knock him off and then I throw him off the boat paddle. Go to Tijuana, put the kilo on the saddle. Sack him, hit a lick and cop a pterodactyl. Pap him, chop a bite down like an apple. Match it with the acres, with the horses and the cattle.
Travel like a narco.
Narco. Got dope like Pablo.
Pablo.
Cut dope like Pablo.
Cut dope.
Chop trees with the Draco.
Draco.
On the knock at Diego.
Diego.
Say hasta luego.
Luego.
We'll be in rapping Kilo. Snub nose with potato.
Straight out the jungle.
Yeah.
This real rap, no mambo.
Yeah.
My skin black like mambo.
Yeah.
Got stash spots in Honda.
Yeah.
Straight out the jungle.
Magnifico. Take out.
No monkey in the jungle, blow hot like a sauna. Busting nothing, I'ma tryna weave an anaconda. Jumping in the water, tryna skip across the water glass. Seat guards out, got me beat by a Ferrari. Out, bag it. Bag of money, no, I gotta have it. Savage, but I'm still a gentleman in the Cali. Catalytic. Turn them in, I'm about to cabbage. Till his whole family, if you run up with the pillars. I just put a pack on the way to Bogota.
Pack.
Poke his eyes out, and I'm telling what he saw. Garage y'all, I don't know if he'll talk.
My job.
Get a chainsaw, and I'ma saw our legs off.
Saw.
They know that we're a gang, but they said that we're rain. Investigating, taking pictures of the whole team. On the cover, tryna do a sting. 10 minutes on a plane, going straight to military.
Trapping like the narco.
Narco.
Got dope like Pablo.
Pablo.
Cut dope like Pablo.
Cut dope.
Chop trees with the Draco.
Draco.
On the knock at Diego.
Diego.
Say hasta luego.
Luego.
We'll be in rapping Kilo.
Yeah.
Snub nose with potato.
Straight out the jungle.
Yeah.
This real rap, no mambo.
Yeah.
My skin black like mambo.
Yeah.
Got stash spots in Honda.
Yeah.
Straight out the jungle.
Sitting by me at the beachfront bar. He seemed pretty tore up, so I bought him a beer and we lit up a couple Cuban cigars. profound. He said a guy like me likes the simple things that I can wrap my head around. I didn't know where he was going, but I began to understand. When he stood up on his stool like a fool and started hollering at the man. So play me something about drinking, one about cheating, a few about losing, lying and leaving, something where somebody did somebody wrong. You that fella on the TV in a cowboy hat, always playing guitar? I said, yeah, that's me. I thought, boy, there goes that. But he didn't want a CD or a picture of me autographed. No, all he asked was play me something about drinking, one about cheating, a few about losing, lying and leaving, something where somebody did somebody wrong.
The Unga Tribal Council is a proud sponsor of KSDP and Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting. Thank you for your support.
Are you drunk enough? Now to judge what I'm doing?